Hi, this is Casey. This is the last session of Advent Conspiracy, December 18th. So glad you're with us. So on Thursday, we welcome Danielle Schroyer, who's a pastor, formerly in a congregational context. She actually founded a sort of what's known as an emergent church, just sort of an alternative expression of church about 10 years ago called Journey. And Journey, she was the leader of Journey for a little over 8 years, and then she stepped down in order to write, and she's a parent of a couple of kids, and so she decided she wanted to write more full-time and focus on being more present to her family. And she's written some great stuff, and she's awesome. And so she came, and her talk was called Presence Amid the Presence. And I want to play for you 10 minutes of it, because in the middle of it, I was like, that is exactly what I needed to hear, and something I think that's relevant to today's conversation, which is this fourth in the chain of Advent Conspiracy, Love All. So I'm going to play Danielle, and I figured out how to hook it up to the TV so you can actually hear it this week. Yes, yes.
If you choose to try this practice of staying present, you may find the beginning and ending your day with that rhythm of blessing makes it a little easier to find your way back there in the middle of the day when things get hairy. So let's up the ante a little and talk about when things get hairy. I can tell you about this firsthand because I live by North Park Mall. So I have entirely different driving routes to and from my house from Thanksgiving until after New Year's. Because there are crowds, and everyone's in a hurry, and it gets dark at like 5 o'clock, and you can't see anything or find your car. All that busyness and running around becomes stress, and you feel it in your gut, and in your shortened breath, and in your racing heartbeat, and in the way your patience bar drops down to zero. My daughter and I, when we find ourselves in a huff, often say, "Oh, I hate everything." I should tell you, we are prone to comical exaggeration in our house. We don't actually hate everything, but somehow, when we say that, it lightens the mood for us. We just stick our grumbliness front and center. And the tiny little letter of Titus in the New Testament also does this in a really funny way. It sticks human grumbliness at center stage in chapter 3. Paul goes on this lovely rant, as he does, about the less than stellar actions people were making, and he ends it by saying, "We hated other people." It really says that. Come look it up. I love how the Bible is so honest. How are we doing? Well, we hated people, so not very good, really. Thank you, Paul. Thank you. But then he continues in the next verse. But when the goodness and loving kindness of God our Savior appeared, he saved us. Oh. When we encounter the love of God, our hearts soften. How can they not, in the face of all that encompassing, unwavering love? The two words here, the ones that are translated goodness and loving kindness, or sometimes other things in different translations, they're the Greek words krestotis and philanthropia. And krestotis is God's kindness, God's mercy. It's that thing that God always does, of treating us better than we deserve. And you've heard philanthropia. It's where we get the word philanthropy. It doesn't mean general love, but specifically love toward humankind. Just ponder that for 1 minute. This is a specific love that God has toward humankind. Philanthropia. While we are driving around frustrated in our cars saying, "I hate everything," and actually maybe a little bit hating other people, God looks upon us, stellar humans that we are, with philanthropia. Love just for us, specifically. And can we just take a brief detour here and say how amazing it is that the word philanthropy does not just call us to be in service to one another, or even just generous to one another, but to love one another? To love all of humanity through the tangible things that we say and do. What a great word. That philanthropia means we're on the hook, that we are our brothers and sisters' keepers, because God has first loved us in the same skin in the game kind of way. Whatever we do at Christmas that could be considered philanthropia, I hope we take a moment to remember that this is the precise love for humanity, that God has for us and that saves us. How wondrous that we can live into that love with our own actions and our own lives. So, back to the goodness and loving kindness that saves us. When that love appears, and the word for appears is epiphanu, because it appears like an epiphany, like a really fantastic and life-changing thought. When that love appears, it saves us. He saves us. At Christmas, the love of God and the kindness of God and the mercy of God appears like a bright light across the skies, like angels singing Alleluia in a field of shepherds, like the world's best epiphany, and the Christ child in whom love has come to dwell saves us. Because the love of God is the most transforming power in the universe, and in what can only be considered a really insane idea on God's part, it has come to find its home in human hearts, even in the traffic at North Park Mall. So here's my second practice for presence. When we find ourselves in a place of frustration or tension or anger or stress, tap into that. Go there. Be mindful of it. And then do this crazy Christian ninja move and expand it. Get beyond your own frustration and begin thinking about the anxiety and stress others might be feeling. The single mom who has limited time to look for gifts and limited money with which to buy them. The couple who is struggling to make it work. Those who have recently lost a loved one and are facing their first Christmas without them. Those who are ill. Those who are lonely. Mothers who fear for the lives of their black sons every time they walk out the door. LGBTQ friends who won't be invited to their family's dinner. All the citizens of Aleppo. The point in this exercise isn't to make light of your own stress or to tell yourself to get over it. The point is to connect the feelings you're having with the feelings that others are having too. It's to draw yourself into a great big web of philanthropia, love for humanity. It's a practice of compassion and mercy and grace. As Episcopalians, you practice this all the time in the prayers of the people, which is a regular part of your liturgy. And this practice, which in Buddhism is called Tonglen, is simply a way of moving the prayers of the people out of the sanctuary and into this very particular space of our own experiences of stress and sadness and loneliness and anxiety and grief. We are all so very human, and when we have run out of patience, we can connect that feeling to the impatience of a parent with no insurance and a sick child, or the impatience of a victim who sees no justice, or the impatience of a family who's waiting for a doctor's diagnosis. We are all human, and we are all in this together. And God bless us, which is, of course, the point, because God does bless us. The goodness and loving kindness of God appears to us and saves us. It saves us every time. So when we take our stress and look upon it with philanthropia, with love for humanity, our hearts soften and they expand. They make room. They move from hating people to sending them loving kindness. They move from our declaration that we hate everything to our humble confession that God loves everyone. One word of caution. If you are new to this practice of expanding your pain to envelop and empathize with the pain of others, I would caution you not to begin by attempting to empathize with your least favorite person on the planet. Don't choose to include your political arch nemesis just yet, or your most estranged family member. This is not the Compassion Olympics. These are preliminary trials. Leave those bigger goals for your New Year's resolution list. And for now, just start small in this practice. Bring to mind the people for whom you already might have compassion. To the situations of pain with which you are already familiar, there are plenty of them. Send love to patients and doctors and nurses, because we have all been in hospital before. Send it to firefighters and ambulance drivers and police officers. If you volunteer with foster kids or in an underfunded school or with the homeless or hungry, send compassion there. Start where you are. Just grow that sense of compassion one circle beyond your own pain and those experiences. That is room enough for starters. And since that one's a little heavy, not quite as easy as breathe.
All right. I wonder what you heard in that. I wonder what resonated. What Danielle said.
I think in one of your sermons a few weeks ago, you talked about peace on earth, and if you want it, you have to live it. I think she kind of talks about that.
Yeah.
If you want, you have to be the change you want to see in the world.
Yeah. I appreciate the way that she talks about empathy not as a guilt or shaming tool, like not to say that being frustrated in the parking lot of a place isn't legitimate, like that you're not really feeling that and you shouldn't feel that because, you know, how petty and small that is in comparison to, but to say that when you begin to expand the rungs of that empathy and compassion, it just puts it in a better context. It broadens it and connects us.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to say first world problem dismissively.
Yeah.
We all make that complaint, and someone's like, first world, and you're like, yeah, I know, I shouldn't even. But, you know, I have a friend who threw that at me, and I'm like, hey, just because it's a first world problem doesn't mean it's not a problem in my world.
Sure.
And so I think that was a good way of saying, mm-hmm. Hey, look, we all have frustrations, and it's a legitimate feeling, mm-hmm. to be irritated by a parking lot at the mall, mm-hmm. or Trader Joe's or wherever else. But you can find a way to get past it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I am frustrated. But
there's always going to be someone with a worse problem than you.
Right. I mean, it doesn't mean you don't have problems.
Yeah.
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 Well, I have a great family counselor that has said, just because you're in the hospital with a broken leg, somebody comes in with two broken legs, it doesn't mean yours doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
So go ahead and feel those feelings about, yeah. your frustration, because to try to just suppress that and not allow yourself to feel it because other people have it worse,
yeah.
it doesn't help anything.
Sure.
But then to put it in the context, it does help you kind of move past it when you stop and think about, okay, yes, I'm frustrated, and whew, they all have a lot of, mm-hmm. frustrations too. And, well, okay, I feel mine, and maybe it's not so bad.
Yeah. You know. Absolutely. I like the suggestion she makes of that, and if you heard somebody loudly guffawing in the background, it was me. This isn't a competition. It's not the Compassion Olympics. Don't immediately start to think that you have to have empathy for someone who is like the hardest person in the world for you to have empathy for. Like, start in that small, tight, concentric circle of compassion of people for whom you already kind of know and understand their lives. Like, you have an access point, an entree into their existence. And so she has a great set of examples. I mean, I love her lists of examples and thinking about parents, but parents who are experiencing different kinds of challenges than we do, like in my family. And that was great because as a parent, I can get into that place, though their circumstance is harder and more challenging, but I can find that sense of solidarity, that compassion comes easier, and then moving the concentric circle out. I think the love all bit of the Advent conspiracy thing is sort of like that. I think it is meant to be love all in this expanding, I love her unpacking of philanthropia, like this expanding circle of
of love for humanity, of love for the world. I'd never thought about philanthropia before. She talked about it that way. I was like, wow, that is pretty cool. I wonder what ways you have in your own family, what ways you've tried to cultivate, to grow your reserves, your reservoir of love, of compassion, and what ways you try to form your children to have deeper reservoirs of empathy and compassion.
And we kind of take it a step further, and because I just loathe making Christmas cookies. I just hate it.
And they love it, and it's such a beat deal.
It's a beat deal with the kids. It's just totally hate it. But
we spent an hour digesting into y'all's issues, but sure.
So, well, what we do is then we make the cookies and we take them to the fire station downtown because they don't have a neighborhood attached to it.
Great idea.
And it's kind of lonely there. It's kind of on the other side of the highway. It's over by the soup kitchens and stuff. So it's kind of it's off. And so they're always glad to see us. They look forward to see us on Christmas Eve. We take a big bite of cookies and fudge to them to show this isn't. And they always offer, you want to come in, we'll give you a tour and mm-hmm. tell whoever I have with us. This is not about you getting to ride on the fire truck or whatever. Mm-hmm. This is about us getting the cookies. Mm-hmm. To them who are having to work Christmas Eve that are not with their families and doing something nice for them, and this is not about them showing around the fire station. So we do that every year.
Mm.
So
that's nice.
They expect us, Yeah, it's kind of the thing that people do cookies for their fire stations.
Yeah.
No one really, they're kind of left out. So.
Yeah. Certain stations get more visits than others.
Yeah, I mean, in neighborhoods, people remember, but not if they're downtown.
Great idea. Thank you. Other ideas? How you've cultivated, nurtured compassion? Yes?
This is just a little thing that I do in the car, and especially now because everyone's so frenzied and it's crazy. There are a lot of frustrated drivers out there. And so when I do this anyway, and I don't do it all the time. When I've got some reserves, when someone cuts me off or honks or someone's behaving badly in the car, driving, I will, and I've explained this to the kids, I will say, bless to myself, bless them, change me, and I'll try to say a prayer for them. And then I can get out of myself and see that person may have something. Who knows what's going on in their life? And so I'll explain that to the kids. Well, something terrible may be going on in their life right now.
Hmm.
It might be, somebody might have just died in their family.
Yeah.
So I kind of talk through that. But also when I'm saying a prayer for someone that it dissolves, saying a prayer for someone that's just started to frustrate me or anger me, I then can hold on to my peace still and it dissolves the anger.
Yeah.
I mean, even people that now you were saying about people that you don't really want to pray
mm-hmm.
for, if you keep praying for, someone that angers you, that you have all these issues with, eventually you will get to a place of compassion if you work on it.
Thank you for that. So what I hear you saying is not the bless their heart in the southern condescending way.
No, that's like saying it's a quick prayer. Like,
yes.
I'm saying a prayer for them.
It's a legitimate prayer, not like a,
No.
Yeah. That's
but
great.
I can change my attitude.
Yeah.
I can say a prayer for them, and I can change my attitude, my reaction to them.
That's great. Thank you. Other ideas? Yeah.
I don't have an idea. I was just thinking that I'm glad what she said about start slow.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I think I must jump to the other end of the political spectrum, and it's very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Starts like it's concentric circles. It's concentric rings, and we grow outward. I think when she was describing that, I was like, that feels so true.
Doable.
Yeah.
It just reminded me of people that I had just forgotten about that I know are probably hurting now. Like my Joe and Diana, their son died last year.
Yeah.
The same thing as, you know, my cousin and his son died. Now this has got to be a horrible time.
Yeah. And, yeah. I just hadn't even been thinking about them at all. I'm sure they're hurting.
Absolutely. There's a... there's a, you know, I don't remember where Melody heard it. It may have come from one of y'all. I can't even remember. But she heard this this thing. We didn't try it this year, so I have no, I can't tell you how it went. I think we will probably try it next year. But if you have a creche in like a nativity scene, or you could even make one. And you know, in the Advent festival, we were making the little baby Jesuses with the little hay or whatever, and have it on the dinner table, or have it next to a child's bedside. And to write in some way on a slip of paper or something, have a little stack of blank things, and write an act of compassion, something that you aspired, tried to do, or saw. Maybe it isn't even something you did, but that you witnessed that day. And put it in the manger through the season of Advent. And in our house we hide the baby Jesus. We hide all the baby Jesuses because we have about 30. We have a Jesus drawer, and Jesus is in the drawer. He's not in the closet. He's in the drawer. And we take Jesus out on Christmas day when we wake up and we start to just start everything, and the children go to the Jesus store and take Jesus out. And so with this, when you put Jesus in that manger, the idea is that it's already filled with these expressions of love, these manifestations of love and goodness and compassion, and it starts to tie all of that together, like here he is, and yet the world is starting to become manifest. I've witnessed how his love has been made manifest in the world for the last month. And even if you don't do it every day, even if you only do it every now and then, or maybe one night you saw four, and then the next night you don't get to it, but if you're diligent, like to picture that little manger piled up, I think that would be pretty cool. Like, I really think that, I know that when I ponder it, it really stirs up my own imagination, my own spiritual imagination, and I think it would be really, could potentially be really powerful for kids of any age. I think this is one of those transcends specific age things, and connects our acts of compassion with compassion made manifest in Jesus. Other ideas, though, that you may have. That's one just like kind of Pinterest style.
I think we're not focused enough. I think we have too many things that we do during Advent, you know, whether it's this reading this Bible verse or doing this account, you know, the Advent tree. And so I feel like maybe next year I need to go through my stuff and go, okay, we don't need this Advent one.
You just need one, or
you know, just pick like one or two. Like, yeah. It just gets to be where, oh, I got to open this door, I got to do that. You know, it's almost like if we in the morning, if we actually let them do all the, and it's me. I mean, it's definitely me and. Me, I'd like to say us. It's not. It's me. It's totally me. So it's like, there needs to be more focus.
Yeah.
Especially now that they're getting a little older. Yes. You know, not the chaos is, I have not toned down the chaos.
Yeah. The idea generation, I mean, I'm trying to use this as an idea sharer, not a, you should be doing all of these things.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, yeah. It didn't feel like that. That's why I'm realizing, like, when people talk about, like, you talk about your cookie thing, like, the fact that it's consistent and it's something every year. I mean, I know we have those things in our family,
yeah,
too, but I don't have that at Christmas. It's just kind of chaos. Well,
it's Christmas week.
I know.
It's double because I hate it.
Yeah. I like that.
You get extra points then.
And like I kind of feel like that.
And like Raquel's idea of them writing the thing, like that's what they've done every year. She had that idea where they wrote the.
Oh, she was the one who had the idea.
Yeah, but it wasn't with the crush. It was just they wrote it down every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like her own advent.
Yeah.
Yeah. The idea I heard sort of takes that and flips it and blends it with a nativity. But it could be whatever. It comes back to that unplug the Christmas machine thing that the authors found, which is, you know, kids want simple traditions. They want to spend time with us, and they want simple traditions and things that they do year after year. And that's when we start to build, and that's on us, so don't overdo it, because then we just make ourselves crazy. But trying to build in that compassion, trying to sort of cultivate within ourselves, within our own lives, not just like teaching our kids you need to do these nice things, but like going yourself, having it be something that is hard to do, that you don't necessarily enjoy doing, and participating in that with your child. I think there's goodness there.
Well, one of the things, so we tape up our Christmas cards. We have these glass doors off our registry. And so we tape up our Christmas cards, and a lot of the cards are people that, like, my kids don't really know, or their family members that live far away. And so we really talk about them and try to talk about, like, the qualities of them that to try to reinforce, I don't know how to act because we're having issues with that in my house right now. But, you know, it has... I'm hoping that my kids are starting to notice that. But to maybe talk more about what you're saying, I think, also.
Yeah. Hmm. The mailbox this year. Have any of y'all used the mailbox in the hallway? This is Cindy introduced that this year.
It added a festival where you
And it's been out there. You can write notes, and it goes to the shut-ins. And so it's like thinking about people who are easily not thought about. And
I got a note back from someone. That was pretty amazing. She was really excited about it. I forgot their name now. I feel bad.
That's okay.
It was very, very sweet. They were very thankful to get her card. And they wrote her back. So it was pretty amazing. So I need to do it again.
Yeah. We have more than a handful of people at Transfiguration who are not here, able to be here anymore on Sundays, and or really ever. And the visits by those Eucharistic visitors who go out, like, that's their connection. And then we send them these, you know, I just thought that was a really sweet idea. Instead of, you know, what's the typical mailbox this time of year? It's a mailbox to Santa. And it flips it into a more compassionate, selfless act rather than a sending my wish list, you know.
Is that going to be ongoing just forever?
I don't know. Should it be?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Should it come out at specific times? I'm worried if it's there all the time, it's just background noise.
Like when it's not during Easter. Yeah. Like not like Valentine's Day. Bring it out, you know? not when we've got so much other stuff thrown at us. Like when
it's a good idea.
When there's a lull, when someone doesn't expect to get a card.
It's a great idea. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take that back.
The whole big problem with Thanksgiving and Christmas is the only time people are ever fed or whatever.
Deb posted a thing about, like, if everyone could have the compassion year round, and I know people do, but like if people who do that one act a year could really just do it a little bit of it year round, what a difference it would make.
It feels like what it feels like to me is like people do that more for themselves than they do. That's what kind of burns me. It's like you're doing this to make yourself feel better and give yourself something
to post it on Facebook.
Yeah. Well, no, like to go and feed the homeless on Christmas Eve or Thanksgiving, where in reality, if you had a should be doing it, making sandwiches or whatever, the whole year, not just because, gosh, we got to do something with the kids for Christmas. I know, let's go to a homeless shelter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
do it to teach their kids a lesson.
Yeah.
More than, like, a lesson in gratitude more than a lesson in compassion to you. That bothers me a lot. But I think that's something I've been wanting to do is, like, throughout the year rather than, like, even twice a year, like you were saying, other than Christmas or New
Year's.
Yeah. It makes such a difference. And especially, like, even my kids they're pretty little right now. And so, you know, they're not going to go volunteer at the nursing home for an hour right now. But I think just seeing us do that would make a difference.
Exactly.
In their compassion level. You know.
Kids are like the ultimate BS meters.
Yeah.
They just are. Kids know it when we're full of crap. I mean, that's why the drop-off Sunday school thing is such a waste of time. Parents who drop their kids off at Sunday school and then go sit and drink coffee and then pick their kid up from Sunday school and drive out of the parking lot. Like, that's, I mean, I guess I appreciate the modest effort that that takes. But do you think
that's
that?
That's clever, actually.
Do you think that kid will?
Can you
do that?
Yeah.
No.
Hey, so next cycle.
Moving on.
I remember a couple years ago when they had to put it in the notices, like, please.
You can't drop your kid off and then leave.
I was like, people do that? But they're like, yes, a lot of people.
And it comes from that. And I'm not. I know I sound super judgy. And I'll own there is some frustration. There is I have some bitterness about it. But my sadness is really that the kid, they know all of that, and they know that the parent doesn't take it seriously, and so they won't. The first chance they get, they're out. So we have to be invested in this compassionate thing if it's gonna work for the kids. You know.
I do think though, I mean. Maybe not to, I don't know, I'm not just trying to convince myself not to feel as bad or be as hard on myself as I'd be inclined to, but being compassionate, I think it's like a super hard problem. Like even just as far as like, I don't know, from like a psychology perspective or whatever, you're only going to care about your small little group first and then kind of building circles out of that, and especially thinking about people on the other side of the world. I mean, that's like, it seems very abstract and practically impossible to really care about that when you have your own concerns. So, tying that into what you were talking about, being in the car, and I think I'm just, you know, talking out my own plan of action or whatever I think I might be able to do to build compassion in myself. I think just kind of building up a little practice of that, I could see how that could be really helpful. You're giving people the benefit of the doubt, praying for them a little bit. Instead of trying to jump to, all right, today I'm going to be a compassionate person, which is, you're going to fail at that.
Yeah.
And that also makes me think of that, I don't know if y'all have heard that talk by David Foster Wallace, it's called This Is Water, where he talked about basically exactly like what you're saying. Like when you go to the grocery store, you can be really mad about having to stand in this line, and why won't this stupid lady like have her money ready and she has to pay a check or whatever. But you could choose to think whether it's true or not. Well, you heard this. Right? Maybe she had a worse day than you did. Maybe who knows what's going on in her life, that kind of thing. And it's kind of like building up a muscle in yourself. The more you
exercise it.
And tying that together, this is all just part of my thought process or whatever. prayer, yeah, it's asking God to do something, but then you're also kind of, even from like kind of a secular perspective, it's doing something to you. Like, it's like meditation practice, kind of building it up in your mind to have more compassion for people. I'm not saying I do any of this, but I feel like that's where I need to start instead of just jumping to some kind of broad activism that I'm probably never going to follow through with.
So I want to come back to something you acknowledged a few minutes ago, which was someone from your family who had lost someone last year came to mind all of a sudden, like her little list of examples. So, it's 11. So a goal, a low-hanging fruit goal, would be to spend 10 minutes today trying to think of someone within your own spheres of friendship, family, or influence, a coworker, someone from your family who you may not see very often, who, and I think you mentioned that you have somebody as well, who you think might actually be having a difficult time this year, this Christmas, and to ponder them and to do something about it, to write them or to call them. And whenever I do these kinds of things, they're like dominoes. And the minute I think about that person, I actually remember somebody else, and it starts to just ripple out. And take some time to respond to those, to really think about them, and to do something just within that sphere, that tightest concentric circle, or maybe the second or third concentric circle. I think that's how we start to exercise our compassion muscles with the people who already will come to our mind if we give ourselves enough time to think about it. And who, unlike the devastated refugees of Aleppo, who I could actually write or actually call. I could actually potentially go visit this person, not to diminish our responsibility to Aleppo, but to say compassion starts here and then ripples out. I'm going to have to do that now. I can't just say, let's do that, and then I don't do it. So I'm going to have to think later who the people are who I need to call and write. All right, we're out of time. I really hope that this has given you something, not just more stuff to do, but stuff to think about, stuff to ponder. I definitely know that this is hard stuff to change. Our culture makes things harder, and our own sort of tendency to want to overfunction makes this harder. So I hope that you're taking something away from these 4 weeks that might impact this year, makes Christmas more joyful, more peaceful, more holy. And next year, as you anticipate what life might be like then. Email me or call me if you need anything. Put on the iParent Facebook page any ideas you have or great stories to share. Thank you for coming. Let us bless the Lord. Thanks be to God.